Welcome to the podcast for Empathy and Imagination. This is the show where we discuss various topics, learn to empathize and imagine with you, each other, and our guests. Welcome. My name is Aubrey.
And I'm Drew Clark. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for joining us. What do we got?
Well, we got welcome, everybody. I'd like to thank you for taking the time to listen today. I appreciate your time. So we got a couple topics for you today. We've got, maybe some kind of updates. We may or may not have a quiz or game. And we got a great show for you.
Cool.
Yeah.
Anything you want to talk about first? You got something? Or?
Let's do a garden update.
Do a garden update.
Garden update.
Okay, so we planted a bunch of cool lettuces, and they're all exploding out of the ground. I'm very happy to see the way the corn is shooting up in size, and other leafy lettuces are exploding. It's fun, beautiful, working pretty well. We did lose one larger plant that was going well, and then it keeled over and died. And I don't know why. It was a sage plant. It was a like a burning sage, and it was doing well, and then it just dried up and keeled over, and I don't know what happened.
What types of lettuce do you have?
I've got romaine. I've got a radicchio. I've got
is that big, the tall one, with the kind of reddish,
reddish green.
Yeah,
yeah. And then I don't know what it's called. There's two other kinds of purple. One's like wiggly leaves, and one is more kind of smooth leaves. We've also got chard and kale out the wazoo.
What do you have a surplus of?
Kale. There's a surplus of kale for sure. Basically, can't eat it fast enough, can't give it away fast enough.
Did you, what about feeding it to the dogs?
I don't know if they would eat kale.
Mix it in with something? Make your own dog food?
Oh, well, that would be something. If I could make my own dog food, I probably would include some. Yeah, I think it'd be a good idea.
You gotta mask the flavor so they'll eat it.
Right? Well, if you, I mean, if I was on a farm trying to make dog food, if I was really thinking about it, probably like fish farm. I'd probably use some fish to feed them. Probably this way you could grind in some kale for sure. No problem. Dogs like fish.
Boutique dog food.
Yeah.
Artisanal.
Artisanal. home created. Yeah. So, yeah. We have a new compost going out, going on, and there was some kerfuffle about it socially, actually. The building manager didn't remember our conversation about that happening, and so when he discovered the maintenance guy, Jaime, he does lots of maintenance, he told the like building manager guy, hey, there's a big hole. And he was like, what? And then I got a really angry-seeming text about its existence.
It's hard to get tone over
it is.
Text it, messages.
And I can still infer from the ands and the long sentences and the I thought we talked about, I didn't, no, like kind of language can sort of depict a possibility of mode.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I did that, and I responded with some thought-out, nonviolent communication about what, remember the conversation we had and my needs for a compost, the other one's full, this is the sustainable thing to do, is to have a second one. Then you close that one and use the first one. It's like, that's, you need two, really.
Yeah.
And that it's going well, and that no one's complained, because I talked to about it with my neighbors before I did it, and so they were like, oh.
Everyone was cool with it.
Everyone was cool with it. So we we calmed down a little bit, and we haven't heard from him in a while, so especially since when I was digging the hole, I found a bunch of drywall just chopped into pieces, kind of just
like cover up?
Yeah, kind of just covered up.
No bones or anything, right?
No bones, just a bunch of drywall. That I estimate they were, when they were building this place, they were like, eh, here's some trash, just throw it there and cover it with dirt, and then that's what happened.
I mean, in fairness, if he just got a message that was like, there's a huge hole in the yard.
I mean, I might
I freak would out probably, too. You know, if it was me, I'd be like, what?
Yeah. And I can empathize with that.
It's like, what, are you digging a grave?
Yeah,
pretty much.
For plants.
A grave for biomatter.
Yeah, I want to make it. I want to add it to the garden later.
Huh. Cool.
I think that's my garden update. Do you have a garden update?
Just that I'm fending off cats day and night.
Mm. How's that going with the cats? What are they doing?
They're digging up the soil.
Mm. Dang it.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's my garden update. Not a lot going on.
You have any thoughts about cat defense?
Chicken wire.
Chicken wire, yeah.
Like we talked about. Yeah. Off the air.
Off the air.
Plastic chicken wire. Create domes over everything, you know. Yeah.
Garden update.
All right.
Okay.
So, just going to bring this in.
Let's do it.
Do you know about Voyager?
The show?
No. The Voyager Project.
Hmm.
This is a project that was launched in the 70s, or conceived in the 70s.
Keep talking.
And basically, astronomers figured out that there's going to be kind of once-in-a-lifetime chance opportunity when a bunch of planets will be lined up in such a way that you could use gravity assist to go from one planet to the next. So
like
specifically,
like a multiple slingshot?
Yeah.
Okay.
And this is a once-in-a-lifetime event. And they were like, well, we got to send a probe. Visit Saturn, Jupiter, Neptune, you know.
To get in that timing?
Yeah.
To ride the wave, basically? To
ride the wave. And they did it.
It worked?
It worked, and it's still, to this day, still working.
How far is it?
It's a good. I'm glad you asked. 110 astronomical units. 110 astronomical units. Which
please remind
is,
us what that. Yeah.
Let's see. Basically, it's like 16 billion kilometers. I think.
How many miles is that? I mean, that's even. It's probably like 23 billion miles, right? Something like that. Help us out.
It's like 1.6 billion. Kilometers.
Now, are we getting into a light year at this point, or how's that fit in?
Not quite a light year yet. So, Voyager 1 did its thing, but I want to talk about Voyager 2.
Okay.
Voyager 2 was the second satellite to be sent out by NASA, and it was sent out on August 20th, 1977, to study the outer planets. Part of the Voyager program, it was launched 16 days before its twin, Voyager 1, on a trajectory that took longer to reach Jupiter and Saturn, but enabled further encounters with Uranus and Neptune. It is the only spacecraft to ever have visited either of the ice giants. Its primary mission ended with the exploration of the Neptunian system in 1989. At a distance of, as I said, 1.65 times 10 to the 10th kilometers from the sun, Voyager is one of the most distant human-made objects. As of December 2014, it was traveling at a velocity of 55,000 kilometers per hour.
Per hour?
Pretty fast.
It's cooking.
It's cooking.
I mean, like, if you were standing still and it whizzed by you, it'd be, like, hard to fathom how fast that went by.
Only because there's so little, infinitesimally small amount of air resistance in space, it can go these speeds.
It's like, and then my brain goes right to, like, what about space dust or meteors or asteroids?
It's a good question.
I mean, that seems like a bit of luck to make it that far without any kind of shield.
Mm-hmm.
I imagine there's not really a shield.
Well,
on
space
thing.
Is so big, even though there's dust and particles and etc. It's so big that nothing is next to anything else. You know.
Yeah, it's fucking cold.
Yeah. So the Voyager has, I think, four nuclear reactors inside of it, or excuse me, three.
How big is this thing, and what is it kind of shaped like?
It just looks like a radar dish with a bunch of shit on the back of it. And huge, like a huge tripod legs.
So you could picture like tripod legs, like three times the length of the dish. But then there's like just kind of random shit on the back of it. Kind of like
instrumentation.
It's like I would picture kind of like if you had a miniaturized Millennium Falcon sort of glued to the back. It's kind of lumpy.
Yeah.
Space parts.
Yeah, space parts. With big antennae poking out.
Yeah.
And they keep the nuclear reactors actually like separate. It's like off on its own little excrescence.
In case it goes kaboom, you think?
Yeah, and because it's emitting so much fucking radiation, they don't want it to interfere with the instruments.
So it has three nuclear power devices going on?
Basically, uranium reactors.
Wow, and that's powering it this whole distance.
Or plutonium.
There's no solar power on it.
No.
Wow.
And
so whoever finds that's going to have really bad time when they find that.
And it's thought that it will allow it to continue operations until at least 2020. At least. So that would mean 1977 to 2020.
Wow.
Is what, 43 years? This thing's just been cooking the whole time. And even though it's been traveling that fast, it's not that far away, but it is pretty far away. It isn't yet past like the helio sheath, the area where the sun's rays diminish hugely. It's about to enter the area between galaxies, between stars, I should say.
Wow.
Yeah.
I can picture that.
Trying to call up a picture here.
The void. I like it.
Here's an image. And bear in mind that the scale is exponential. So these distances are shorter than these distances.
Mm-hmm.
So there's Voyager. Past Pluto. About to travel between the solar system and Alpha Centauri.
Wow. And it's headed for Alpha Centauri?
Yeah. And they shut down a bunch of systems to preserve power before it gets into that part.
Can they send signals?
Because once it's there, it's just going to be traveling from our star to that star for, you know, hundreds of years.
God.
It's so cool, man. Voyager 2 is expected to enter interstellar space within a few months of 2016. So basically now.
How about that?
And it's not headed towards any particular star, although in roughly 40,000 years, it should pass close to the star Ross 248. If undisturbed for 296,000 years, Voyager 2 will pass by the star Sirius. Voyager 2 is expected to keep transmitting weak radio messages until at least 2025, over 48 years after it was launched.
Okay.
So as we speak, this thing's out there, traveling at 55,000 kilometers per hour.
Yeah.
Which is roughly 1,000 kilometers per second, right? Roughly. A little less.
So it's like 870 kilometers per second or something like that.
Yeah.
Which is pretty zippy.
I mean, essentially since...
It's a good clip.
For my whole life, this thing's been speeding through the solar system and beyond.
Yeah. I want to talk about when it reaches the very first star, Alpha Centauri, when we have this thing hurling through space... And say, for example, there's intelligent life near that star. Mm-hmm. We don't know. What happens if they see this and it's like, is there anything on it to, like, communicate in any way to something else?
Yes.
Okay.
There are some things.
Well, I'm curious about that.
So, yes, there is something called the Golden Record. Do you know about this?
Sounds familiar, but go ahead.
Each Voyager space probe carries a gold-plated audio-visual disc in the event that either spacecraft is ever found by intelligent life forms from other planetary systems. The discs carry photos of the Earth and its life forms, a range of scientific information, spoken greetings from the people, and a medley of sounds of Earth that includes the sounds of whales, a baby crying, waves breaking on a shore, and a collection of music, including works by Mozart, Blind Willie Johnson, Chuck Berry's Johnny B. Goode, Valya Balkanska, and other Eastern and Western classics and ethnic performers. So there's a golden record, like LP, sitting there.
And there's an image, too,
bolted,
right?
To the thing, yeah.
So this golden record has all this cool information. That's good news. I'm glad to hear that that's on that thing and not just the radioactive waste and weird boxes. Yeah.
It's like a time capsule almost. You know?
It's one of the best ever, I think.
If someone finds that, the information on the golden disc is culturally very old, you know? Mm-hmm. Some things like Mozart might be timeless, but it's like, yeah, we are and we aren't that culture anymore, you know? But it's such a hopeful idea to put the golden record on the Voyager just in case somebody finds it, you know?
I mean, like, it's got like 200 years to get to Alpha Centauri interstellar space, right?
Something, 200 light years, which is, yeah, a long time.
Oh my gosh. Okay, so by the time that gets there, I mean, who knows? Say, just for example, there actually was life around Alpha Centauri.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know. What if they also sent a probe and we could expect it in about that much time? Huh. Is that something that's possible?
It's possible, yeah.
So we can almost keep our ears and eyes open for some kind of thing flying at us that's weird and has some kind of weird stuff on it.
Yeah, and we sort of do that with SETI.
Mm-hmm.
Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence. It's constantly scanning the sky and collecting data. And really, all it's looking for is patterns. That
radio
might
waves.
That might be intelligently based. Because there are plenty of patterns, like pulsars. Stars that spin. And those are often misinterpreted for alien signals.
Because
they're so consistent. But, nothing. We haven't found anything yet. We've been scanning the sky, looking for patterns. Nothing.
Yeah. But that's probably what they're saying right now, we're saying this.
There are plenty of reasons why. Yeah. One is that space might be that vast. Radio waves die off, etc., you know.
It's like we don't live long enough to conceive of communicating with something that far away if it were to exist, right?
Right.
We don't have the technology to even consider it. It's like the tardigrades, they are the ones who are going to communicate with them.
Yeah.
Pretty probably, because they're... Do you know about the tardigrades?
What is that? It sounds like a Greek word.
Tardigrades is this little microscopic bug that has been on Earth forever. I mean, as long as Earth has had life. I mean, it's pretty close to the beginning. Not quite. Don't quote me on that. But it can consume in a way that is extremely... very simple way to gain energy. They can live in the vacuum of space, frozen in ice. Okay. They're totally...
Is it bacteria? Like a worm?
No, they look like a kind of like 12-legged pig with a weird worm body and kind of a floppy mouth. They're microscopic.
Oh, okay.
And they walk around eating.
What's their natural habitat?
Everywhere. All over the place. Like in volcanoes. And
okay, I was gonna bring in hydrothermal vents.
Thermal vents.
It's on my list.
And in the bottom of the ocean, and ice, in deepness of space,
hot spots.
They're around, doing their thing. Tardigrades.
Hmm.
So they are likely going to keep going. We couldn't wipe them out if we tried, pretty much. I think that's an example of that.
We could genetically engineer, splice them with human DNA.
That's not a bad idea. But it could be a really bad idea.
Could be. Or we could, you know, splice ourselves with fish. Have gills and lungs.
Have you seen, of course, Waterworld?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so yeah.
I mean, aesthetically, right, we know how right. it would look. That's right, he has gills.
That's how it would look. That's not so bad. I mean, I love swimming. If I could breathe underwater while swimming, I would do it a lot more.
Well, you could. You can with the CO2 gel.
CO2 gel?
Liquid oxygen. You know, like in the movie The Abyss, when they drown the rat in a thing of liquid.
Yeah. Yes, that is hard to watch.
They actually did that. Like, that's not an effect. Cameron got a lot of shit for that. But he actually killed the animal. No, it didn't die. It was a demonstration of how this shit actually works.
What shit? It's not real.
It is real. But what, if you're a human and you have... It's basically like a plasma liquid oxygen. So you can inhale it into your lungs. But it's heavier than water. So you really have to work at each breath, but you're breathing this super oxygen-rich fluid.
How do your lung valves just be okay with that, you know?
Because there's enough oxygen in the water. So there is a moment where there's a moment of panic when you have to actually inhale this shit into your lungs.
People have done this? That's real?
Yes. Yeah. It's totally real.
Oh, I didn't know that.
It's totally real, man. It's crazy, too, because in order for it to be viable, and the reason it's cool is because you can go farther down in the water because there's no air in your lungs. It's water, so you have a higher, you can sustain more pressure. But the drawback is that you basically need a CO2 scrubber. You need something that scrubs the CO2 from your blood stream, which basically means a huge fucking needle into your femoral artery. Like an IV thing, and that's constantly reprocessing your blood so that you can do this.
No thanks.
That's a real thing. That's a real thing, man. Wow. It's crazy.
Wow.
And, without that, if it wasn't for the needle in the thigh, you know, it's interesting. It would be like tempting to try it out.
Possibly. Is it story time?
Huh. So how about a quiz?
Oh, cool. I'd love a quiz.
So, is it time for a sponsor break?
Okay, yeah. Let's that's what you were doing. Let's take a short break to take a word from our sponsor, then we're going to do the quiz. Final Corp. Ladies and gentlemen, Final Corp is introducing its newest line of Nays, the fruity sport carbonated mayonnaise-based beverage brought to you by Final Corp. It is Nays. When you're hitting the half pipe, don't forget your Nays. Now available in strawberry, vanilla, canary, peach, firewood, staples, paper salad, cheese, and green.
Final Corp. It'll be fine.
Thank you, Final Corp, for the cheery ad. And as always, thanks to our listeners for supporting us. So we have quiz time.
We got a quiz. It's time for a quiz.
It's quiz time. So my turn to quiz you.
Okay. I'm ready.
Okay.
What's the quiz? What are we doing?
Doing a little quiz about auto knowledge.
Auto knowledge. Okay.
Car knowledge. Okay. Auto mechanic car knowledge.
How about I give a little backstory on why I would why I would do that?
Yeah. It's not out of the blue. You have some experience.
I do. I have been in the car world for years, meaning I've been an enthusiast of automobiles for some time. Basically, since I was about 14, I'd say. But then I was ready to have a driver's license, and I was like considering, could I petition to try to take some sort of a test to see if they could see that I, of course, am mature enough to have a driver's license now at 14. And I was like wondering if that could be made so for me. But turns out, no. So I got my learner's permit when I was 15 and then my license the day after I turned 16. And I think I've owned an automobile ever since. And in some ways, I've done a lot of things to cars. Like I've owned several hot rods, muscle cars, one four-wheeler, like a kind of a sporty Japanese sedan, and you know, some other kind of cool stuff over the years. And I've swapped out motors. I've painted cars.
68
I've done,
GT.
Yeah, I did. I had a one of them was a 1968 Dodge Dart GT, two door, 318.
GT stands for
Gran Turismo. It was a V8 two door. You know, late 60s muscle car.
Huh.
And it was unique and cool. And I only actually got to drive it a few miles because there was a lot of stuff we had to do. And the taking a part of it actually ended up with never finishing it. But that's only one of the stories. Later on, I had much more success with completing projects. But
so you have experience with cars.
I have experience with other people's cars, my cars. I have been paid to work on cars. That has occurred. So, and I have friends in the industry now.
Okay. All right. Let's get underway here. Question number one, the total amount of combustible gas that is processed by an engine in one complete cycle is known as its
total amount of combustible gas known as its cubic
that is processed by an engine. It's multiple choice. So the total amount of combustible gas that is processed by an engine in one complete cycle is known as its volume, displacement, torque, bore, or stroke.
Displacement, final answer.
Okay, displacement. Number two.
Was I correct? Do I get to know now or
later?
Later. Okay. All right, we're going to build this up.
A little bit of a build up.
Okay. I might make it sound anyway. I might get one of those.
Hey, you never know.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, it'd be cool to have like a buzzer and a horn, you know, like game show sounds. Number two, which of the following layouts describes a car with the engine in front of the driver and which uses the rear wheels as the only driving wheels? Is it MR, F4, FR, RR, or FMR?
FR.
Question number three. Which of the following is not a part of an engine's ignition system? Manifold, distributor, spark plugs, coil, magneto.
Manifold, final answer.
How many strokes are there?
Okay. I'm going to just do that when think I'm right. I think we need a noise. I think I got a noise.
Because I don't. If I knew if it was right or wrong, I would do the ding or the.
Yeah. I think we got to have some kind of ding or something.
Okay.
Okay.
How many strokes are there in a typical V8 engine's ignition sequence?
Strokes?
How many strokes are there in a typical V8 engine's ignition sequence? 1, 2, 3, 4, or 5?
I don't know this answer, so I'm going to guess on this one. I'm going to say 3. 3 is my guess.
Question number 5. A turbocharger is a device used to produce forced induction. True or false?
That is definitely true.
Question number 6. A device used to transfer heat from a liquid into the surrounding air is known generally as a heater, thermostat, sunroof, radiator, or climate control.
Radiator. Ooh, it's building up.
Question number 7. I think there are 14 questions total. Question number 7. Which of the following might directly affect the rate of acceleration of a vehicle? Is it the drag coefficient of the vehicle? Power output from the vehicle's engine? Total weight of the vehicle, including occupants and luggage? Gear ratio of the currently selected gear, or all of the above?
All of the above.
What does LSD... question...
LSD stands for lysergic acid dithymate.
Right. Question number 8. What does LSD stand for?
Lysergic acid dithymate.
Okay. But, late spin delivery, level split distributor, lowered suspension design, limited slip differential, or luxury sports drive?
Luxury sports drive.
I think it's limited slip differential.
I thought that too, but...
We'll see.
We'll see.
Question number 9. Getting close to the end here. Coil springs, leaf springs, and shock absorbers are all components of the blank system.
Suspension.
Ooh, I have to type it in here. I have to type in suspension. Question number 10. An alternative nice. Type of engine based on one or more rotating roughly triangular rotors rather than pistons that move in a straight line is the...
Rotary engine.
Blank rotary engine.
What? Wait, what am I answering? I've jumped it.
Fill in the blank. An alternative type of engine based on one or more rotating, roughly triangular rotors, rather than pistons that move in a straight line, is the blank rotary engine.
Like who invented it? Like the Banks?
There's a name for it, yeah. I know this. This is the one that I know.
Let me think. Can I get a hint? Maybe can there be a hint?
It's a proper name. It's a last name.
The last name. Okay. Schmargen, Flecken, Gerges, Jerken, Swindle, Slappy, Surface, Sandwiches, Spanky, Spanked It, Bad People, Up and Down, Square Spankers.
Okay. Square Spankers. Is that your final...
That's so funny. Okay.
Square Spankers sounds plausible. We'll find out at the end if that's correct or not. Square Spankers. Gotta type this in. Sounds reasonable to me. I don't know cars very well. Maybe Square Spankers rotary engine. Okay. Question number 11. When describing a vehicle, the terms 5-speed manual or 4-speed automatic refer to its type of blank.
Transmission.
Huh. This is an interesting question. Question number 12. Name a word that can follow oil, air, and fuel.
Water. Oh, no. Oil, air, fuel, ignition.
Yeah. Injection?
Ignition or friction.
Injection?
It's probably ignition.
Ignition. I'll put down ignition. Let the record state that I said
yeah.
Injection.
Record. It's recorded. We can check.
And spank diapers. Spank diapers. Rotary engine. Okay. Question number 13. A system that uses the pressure of a liquid to provide mechanical motion is known as a blank drive system.
Hydraulic. Hydraulics is cool because it's a way to use energy to expand energy through pressure and types of fluid. It's pretty cool. You can kind of become super strong. That's like what you might see in an exoskeleton is like hydraulic power. If there was like some kind of motor pumping the fluid around.
Do we have any kind of drum roll? Last question. Question number 14. Question number 14. Which of the following engine modifications is guaranteed to produce additional power output? Is it exhaust upgrade, engine management upgrade, ignition system upgrade, port polish, or none of the above?
Which one of those is guaranteed to increase engine performance?
Which of the following engine modifications is guaranteed to produce additional power output?
Okay.
Exhaust upgrade, engine management upgrade, ignition system upgrade, port polish, or none of the above?
Port polish.
So I'm going to submit my answers here.
Okay.
Let's Hopefully do it's it. Not a clickbait bullshit, but... Okay. Question number one. Total amount of combustible gas that is produced by an engine in one complete cycle is known as the displacement. Correct.
All right.
Number two, which of the following layouts describes a car with the engine in the front of the driver and which uses the rear wheels as the only driving wheels? FR. Correct. Which of the following is not a part of the engine ignition system? The manifold. Correct. Question four. How many strokes are there in a typical V8 engine? You said you didn't know the answer. You guessed at 3. Correct answer is 4.
Oh, said that way. That makes way more sense. How many strokes? All of them are 4 stroke. I thought you meant the ignition. I thought you meant how many times it went around before starting. I didn't know you meant what was this. 4. All 4, yeah.
Moving on. Number 5, a turbocharger is a device used to produce forced induction. Correct. Number 6, the device used to transfer heat from a liquid into the surrounding air is known generally as a radiator. Correct.
Ding.
Which of the following might directly affect the rate of acceleration of a vehicle? You said all of the above. Correct. What does LSD stand for? Limited slip differential.
Oh.
Incorrect.
Okay. All right.
Coil springs, leaf systems, and shock absorbers are all components of the suspension system. Correct.
Woohoo!
Number 10, an alternative type of engine based on one or more rotating roughly triangular rotors rather than pistons that move in a straight line is the square spankers rotary engine. I'm sorry. Square spankers is incorrect. It's Wankel. It's the Wankel rotary
engine.
I was trying to charade you into Wankel.
Well, we may actually let the record show. I might have said that right in the beginning. We may have to go back on that and recap.
Maybe we can do a... At the same time. Nope. Okay. When describing a vehicle, the term 5-speed manual or 4-speed automatic refer to the type of transmission. That's correct. Name a word that can follow oil, air, and fuel. You said ignition. This is weird. We would have accepted the following answer: filter, gauge, or flow.
That's a strange question.
Yeah. You got it wrong, and they got it wrong. A system that uses the pressure of a liquid to provide mechanical motion is known as hydraulic. That is correct. And which of the following engine modifications is guaranteed to produce additional power output? You said port polish. Correct answer is none of the above. Sowie. However, you did get 9 correct out of 14. You got a 64.3%.
Ooh.
Which is what, a D? A D?
Yeah, it's a D.
Good job, though. I mean, I knew one of those questions. 2 of them. Cool. Thanks for...
Some of those questions were weird. I give myself 2 more bonus points for there being with those. So I got 11.
1, 2.
Okay. Let's do the story. And then, yeah, let's do it. Finish up with a topic.
Story time. This is a story I wrote called The King and the Clones of the King. The clones of the king are exactly like the king, except they have better teeth. And they metabolize food differently, so their farts are blander. Every fortnight, for the king's benefit, gladiatorial games between clones of the king, lasting all day, clang in the humid arena, watched by roaring spectators. The king is seldom in attendance. Instead, the king is usually in his chambers, lying in bed, his sheets pulled up over his head. The redness of his face shows through, flanked by manicured fingers clutching the hem of his blanket. On those days when he does not attend the games, the king sends in his place, to sit in the royal box with his retinue, one of his clones. The clones of the king are temperamentally similar to the king, down to their predilection for sending clones in their place on important business. This has resulted in a constant rivalry between clones of the king, with one or another trying to pull rank, or else insist on their primacy, insist that they are the one real king. The king, the real king, is too apathetic to interfere, even though it would settle once and for all the many tensions resulting from clones insisting they're the real king when in fact they are imposters, and would quiet the ruckus raised by this infighting and admit the possibility of the king getting a good night's sleep. The clones of the king live in separate chambers in the king's castle. All are tidier than the king. Their rooms are neat, while the king's room is a dump. The king brushes his teeth. His clones don't need to, but do anyway, and they floss. The king's preoccupations pale compared with those of his clones. As he thinks about his clones, the king's anger flares. The sheets pulled up over his face darken with the moisture of his rapid breath. His fingers turn white from clutching. The king only makes public appearances when there is a high probability of an assassination attempt. His advisors try in vain to dissuade him, but, they being clones of the original advisors, the king ignores them. The king has had it up to here with clones. "A political necessity, I know," he says from beneath his sheets. The king employs various techniques in an attempt to distinguish himself from his clones. He grows his finger or toenails to different lengths, shaves his eyebrows or half his beard, wears his crown backwards or aslant, dyes his face plaid. But invariably, one of his clones has anticipated him, as if they knew his mind, and strut the halls with the same ridiculous self-modification within that very day. "The clones know," the king thinks. He suspects one of his clones may be a spy. All of the clones suspect the king to be a spy. Thus, elaborate games of espionage are continually staged. The halls of the castle buzzed with pregnant whispers, shadowy gestures, the passing of coded missives, and talk of nascent coups. Also, and this may be important, the king is a clone but doesn't know it. It would break his heart if he found out. More damaging, perhaps, would be the knowledge that there is no original king. There is no original king. But the office of the king must exist for the kingdom to function. There is no comfort for the clones of the king. Their highest joy comes from accurately portraying the king. Their happiness is proportional to the degree to which they believe they have accurately portrayed the king. Some clones are better actors than others, and some that seem bad are merely acting that way. The king, for his part, need not act, only be. On days when the king is acting, his handlers, in disparagement, send in his place for matters of state one of the more talented clones. Matters of state must always be handled by an earnest king, or, barring that possibility, by the clone of the king best able to act the part of the real king being earnest. The king is a self-effacing man. The clones of the king are all narcissists. The king whispers. The clones of the king shout, filling the halls of the clone of the castle with their din. The king's crown, being so encrusted with priceless gems, is kept safe in a vault deep within the clone of the castle. The king wears instead an identical imitation crown. The king is impatient to make a name for himself in the quote-unquote real world. Something he feels his clones have already accomplished. Fini. Thanks for listening. Story time. Thanks for listening.
Wow.
Okay, so that I really had a lot of imagery there.
Nice. What jumped out at you in terms of imagery?
I really saw the like plaid painted face on two different kings, like going, "Oh, hey, how's it going?" in some hallway. And like then he just goes like, "What the fuck?"
Right.
I really got that image. That was really clear.
Sounds like I accomplished my goal.
I'd say so.
In some ways. To evoke an image.
Yeah, time for a little topic.
Of course.
Okay, so we got a topic here. And so I'm going to mention this topic, and then I'm gonna ramble for a little bit, and then cool. Let's see what happens. Okay.
All right, what's your topic?
2070 taxes. Thank you all. So the topic I'm bringing in is 2070, the year. That year is going to be in the future. And I think we're going to make it to that year in life.
I think so.
Yeah. I think so. I think we're going to make that. And that maybe, I don't know how much past that, but I think that's going to happen, right?
Yeah.
So 2070, I want to talk about the tax law. Of 2070.
Taxes.
Like, what might that be? Like, in the United States. Like
more the same?
Federal income tax, you know, the kind of the whole, that whole thing. What might that be like? And when I think about that, there's a couple of different kind of zones you could go in to think about it. And I'd like to hear what comes up for maybe you right away when you think about what it might be, what might be some key changes, what would be in place, out of place. What do you picture?
It's hard to project that far in the future what taxes will be like. I'm interested in your opinion. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but you think that basically the system will collapse before that point.
If I am to continue to be studious about whatever sort of information that can come in to update my understanding, I hope to be presently in the future pursuing that to update my information to the most current, most true. And in my present position, I do carry the belief that the socioeconomic system cannot go more than 40 years into the future without extreme changes that would have it be so unrecognizable it would be almost silly to call it the same thing.
You think there'd be, do you think it would be cool if there were taxes at all, or do you think it would be cool if there weren't taxes?
If we're living in a capitalist free market democratic socioeconomic system, from that perspective, I can definitely see the merit of a group goal where the people all choose together what they think would be awesome, and then they all put a little bit into it and make that happen.
But if it was resource-based?
If it was a resource-based economy, there's no need for money, so there's no need for taxes.
Is there a need for something commensurate with taxes, like everyone chips in labor?
You know, I think that in the future, there probably will be a rotational shared, like, quote, work or study sort of thing that will be obviously growing to the person and improving the planet, sort of bring those together in new ways. And I do think that that would probably be likely. But I don't know. I mean, that's a future that I'm very old in, and I probably will be upset and confused. So,
because I think Buckminster Fuller, check out our last episode, but yeah, I think he talked about how for every 10,000 people that don't have to work, there are a couple things there. But his point was, for every 10,000 people that want of nothing, there's going to be one guy who just breaks new ground with whatever it is. It's gonna be one innovator always, which is another way of saying that is that even though there's no incentive to work, people, I think, want to work. People generally want to not just lay around all day and sleep. Some people want to do that, but most people don't want to do that. Most people are more interested in, oh yeah, like physical motion and doing activities. And if they were doing activities that were in line with their needs and their wants, there you go.
There you go.
And Bucky was like, yeah, for every 10,000 people, there's going to be one Leonardo da Vinci. There's going to be one Thomas Edison. There's going to be somebody to advance scientific knowledge.
Hmm.
Because they'll want to do that because people are naturally curious.
Mm-hmm.
And you give them everything they want, and guess what? Maybe humans can't have everything they want because they always want to look at the horizon, get over the next hill and look at the horizon.
We can meet more of the needs. We can measure and meet more needs in all scopes of life. And we'll probably never like completely meet all needs, you know.
That's probably what makes us human, is that there are intangible needs and desires. I mean, the need for colonization. What if that was a need? The need to harbor and propagate life.
Well, I would call that a strategy.
A strategy to meet the need of security.
Yeah.
Because basically security.
Yeah.
Colonizing the moon, colonizing Mars. It's security. Mm-hmm. I want to be secure that humans will live. Even if we fuck up Earth, there's the Mars colony. Even if we mess up the moon, there's the Mars colony.
Hmm.
And I think maybe space colonization meets a few needs.
Hmm.
Like the need for the need to know, the curious need, and the need for safety in a weird way, even though it's super dangerous.
But it's new land.
It's like a species centric security. Sheep aren't gonna colonize the moon. Plankton, whales. We gotta like bring these things off the Earth.
Yeah, take them to Start Mars making and terraform new
versions. But yeah, 2070 tax law.
Yeah,
I imagine if the system is going the way it's going now, it would just be an oppressive tax.
Like, what percent of your income do you think you'd be being taxed if you were still employed in 2070?
Like 90%.
Yeah, it would be like 90%. It would have to be, if it could stretch its existence the way it is into that far into the future, they say by, I think, 2050, that in order to pay the interest to the Federal Reserve payment of our debt system, it would take something like
just to pay the
50% tax rate on every single person's dollar.
Doesn't seem like a sustainable system.
Right. Yeah, so we don't have to take it down. It's fucking going down. Hmm. We got to move out of the way and grab onto something else or create something else, in my view.
It's like building a boat while the boat you're hanging onto is disintegrating.
Yeah.
Trying to make a raft with one hand and the other hand you're clutching for dear life.
That's exactly right.
And on the boat that's disintegrating, a loved one is there like, no, you should really cling to this boat. You should really cling to this boat. You can see it disintegrating underneath them.
Yeah.
You can see them going underwater, still pleading with you, entreating you, no, this is the way to go. While you're, with your other hand, you're pumping the bellows to fill up the raft that you just made. And at one point, you have to let go of one.
Yeah.
And embrace the other.
You can have a rope.
It's tough.
You can have a rope to tie between the two, but you don't have to be touching. The rope could be long, you know, while it's disintegrating. Occasionally you could visit, you know. You could. You could be like, hey, I'm just saying hey.
Yeah.
And then you back away again. That's what I think would be good. So you're not totally cut off, you know. You can go there and say, hey, here's your taxes and happy birthday and then leave.
Yeah, maybe there's some way for taxes to work. Fit in.
So 2070 tax law, I believe it would have to be something like 80% of every person's personal income tax would have to be going to pay the interest of the debt to the Federal Reserve, which is all money in circulation.
Yeah, you wouldn't. You would have so little money to spend on yourself that you become a slave to the system.
And the people who would be siphoning that at the very top would have these like super ridiculous, opulent, like island castle kind of defense protection trillionaire kind of situation. And there would be lots of people who are like making it work with what they could find, right? So that doesn't sound very good.
Yeah. But it also sounds so natural.
Because that's the course we're on, I believe.
Because that's what we've been doing. It's almost like hopefully there is no tax law in 2070.
It may not exist.
I mean, hopefully it wouldn't exist, right?
Hopefully not. You're about to give us a heavy beat, I think. Ooh, let's have a drum off.
I think you win.
Okay, I win!
Hey, I win. Thanks again to Final Corp for supporting us. Thanks to our listeners for giving us your ear and your time and your understanding. This is Aubrey.
And I am Drew Clark.
Signing off. Thanks very much.
See you next time.
Thank you.